I have a confession to make. We have to start off with the Nikita Chronicles.
Yes, go ahead. Let's hear it.
I'm so embarrassed. Is this a safe space?
It's 100% a safe space. Let's go.
Okay, don't judge me. So, my friend James Andrews, who was at Columbia, I think at the time, came to me and was like, "Oh, I got this young girl. She's gonna be big. I mean, Columbia's putting a lot behind her. And I want to introduce you to her because I think she'd be great, work with you and, just sort of cultivate a relationship with super early, right?" So
So
I'm
at
like, okay,
Nike, when you were at Nike.
well, Nike, yep. So I said, "Well, tell me about her." So he says, "Oh, well, she's young. I think she was in her teens. And she plays the piano." And I was like,
You're listening to The Soul Chronicles, the podcast navigating life and times in the sneaker industry, Hollywood, and corporate America.
Every time we finish a season, I think that we don't have any stories left. I'm like, what else are we going to talk about? But then we kind of brainstorm and realize that we have a lot more to tell and more people to talk to too, right?
Absolutely. And I think, the more things happen in the news and, people start coming forward and talking about different really juicy tidbits of information, we realize all the content we still have in the vaults. And so that's why I'm really excited about today and talking about this power couple and our experiences with them. Because when we saw what they are currently doing, we thought it was so cool. And then I know you sort of said to me, "Hey, Nikita, you know what? We need to record about them." And we talked about it a little bit last season, but this makes sense now because it's just so timely.
Yeah, so today's episode is about Alicia Keys and Swizz Beatz, both, born and bred New Yorkers, native New Yorkers. And we know them. I mean, they're doing so many things, but we know them from like very early in their careers, in their music careers. And what we're talking about, like with them, is totally separate. Like, I mean, they didn't even, a relationship between the two was not even a thought at the time. But because they're together, we're just going to combine them nicely in a little episode, the Alicia Keys and Swizz Beatz episode. Yeah, funny, they don't have like a little Hollywood nickname, do they?
You know what? I don't know. I thought we went away from that.
Okay, all right. All right,
Well,
maybe.
after
I mean, they don't
Kimye,
need it,
and
but
no, not at all. Not at all.
yes. So, I'm in Brooklyn right now, and coming up next month is going to be an exhibition from the Dean Collection. Swizz Beatz and Alicia Keys are really big art collectors, and they're going to be showcasing work from their Black art collection. Maybe it's not all Black art, I'm not sure, but I know they collect a lot of Black art.
So when I first heard about Alicia Keys, a friend of mine, James Andrews, who was at Columbia at the time, came to me and was like, and I was at Nike, came to me and said, "Hey, Nikita, I got this young girl. Columbia's putting a lot behind her. She's going to be big. Would love for you to start a relationship with her really early. She's a total sports person," whatever. So I'm like, "Well, tell me about her." I said, at the time she was late teens. She plays the piano. And right there, I was like, because I was dealing with a lot of hip hop, R&B, whatever, but 15-year-old playing a piano, I don't know. Then he was like, and I said, "Well, let's show me a picture." And she had the cornrows and the whole look. And I was just like, still don't know. Then he played some of the music for me, which the music was good, yes, but I just wasn't feeling it, Mahamada. And I legit was like, that's not gonna work. And he would always call me like, "I want to bring her in. Can you send her something?" I was like, "I'll send her something on the strength of you, but I just don't get it.
Right.
I don't see it. I don't understand it." So how wrong was I,
Well, I mean, I think that it wasn't just you. It can take artists a while to get their groove, to find the right team, because when she did find the right team, she got, I don't know, I'm not gonna say she got dropped from Columbia. I don't know what happened, but she eventually got to J Records.
Right, I think because, to your point, there's a lot of that goes into it beyond just the music, and I think there's a lot that goes into having the right kind of music at the right time, if you will, the talent notwithstanding, right? And so Jamie, who was working with me at the time, would never let me live it down. Once she did hit, and would always be like, you remember that time you said Alicia Keys would never work? So that would always keep me super duper humble. And I learned, you know, to mind my words. But, you know, like I always tell you, I was the same person that said Starbucks wouldn't work.
Oh my God, girl. Wow.
So yeah. Anywho.
Yeah. But
yeah. So that was my first introduction to her. And I know you ended up having a ton of interaction, legendary at Nike anyway, with her. So I would love for you to share a little bit of that with our audience.
Yeah, well, when I first kind of like was introduced to her, she was then, as I mentioned, at J Records. And, you know, that was Clive Davis's label. And I'm not sure how she came to me, but I became really good friends with her press person. You know, he was handling communications at J Records. And they came into the showroom in LA, and you know, maybe she hadn't even had an album out yet. Like she was about to release. I remember when she first came into the showroom, she was like, you know how the hype is like, this is the next coming. You know how they do. And you're like, okay. She was like, really sweet girl, you know. So that was that first meeting. And then fast forward, Trace Magazine, which
Trace.
Yes. So Trace Magazine, you know, they always had this like really popular black model issue, just kind of like really cool downtown hip black African arts, culture, music. So they were working on an issue where Alicia Keys was going to be on the cover. Basically, she was going to be the cover of this issue, and it was part of the rollout of her debut album. And, you know, I was good friends with Claude, who was the owner of Trace Magazine. And, you know, everybody is like, Nike, 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 can Nike sponsor?
Right. We just had vaults full of money for sponsorships just under our desk.
You know? My God. Right. And so I'm like, you know, like it's not possible. Like I don't have any money to sponsor. That's not what like my department does. And definitely a brand just doesn't do that. But, you know, I have found a little loophole.
As we do.
And you know, Nike Town was always really open, as we talk in many episodes of how, like the number of things we've done at Nike Town. But I pitched it to Nike Town. So basically they wanted to have an issue release party. You know, so Alicia Keys was on the cover. They wanted to have a big party to release that issue, which was kind of like the week of her album release. And she was going to be at the party and perform at the party, right? So that was kind of like overall what was going to happen. And you know, of course, it wasn't exactly what they wanted, but they were like, okay, well, if that can happen, we'll take that. Yeah, let's do that. Yeah, so that's kind of like where the story starts, right?
Wow. So Trace Party, Nike Town, record release. I mean, this sounds pretty big, Mama.
Yes, it was. But, you know, again, at the time, she wasn't known. Like, I think she maybe had one single out, maybe Fallen. Was that her first single?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. And now we're going to go back. This possibly, I don't know if this was my last year at Nike or not. I can't remember exactly when. You know, I was like Miss
I was
little...
gone by then. So.
Yeah, you were.
I'd already like threw up the deuces.
So I'm here. I was like, oh, I'm not saying I was always getting in trouble because I didn't like get in trouble, right? But like, you know, I had these like people in the New York office who were like always trying to gatekeep and try to like keep me under their thumb. And I'm like, I'm not going to be controlled.
Can't be controlled.
I can't be controlled. Right. So listen, so technically this is happening in New York City. which means the people handling New York City marketing should be a part of it. I'm just not going to let them be a part of it because they didn't deserve to be a part of it, Nikita.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it was that Muhammad or if it was based on experience when really great ideas had been brought forward and they were co-opted or stolen. And then just, you know, people never got credit for their ideas, like, you know, the 30th anniversary book, as an example.
Yes.
If I'm just throwing examples out there. So yes. I don't think it was just you, you know.
Right. It wasn't a personal thing. Yeah.
No, it was just you wanting to protect your idea and the integrity of your idea. Because I think too, and I believe a lot of listeners can relate to this, particularly because our podcast is about sports, entertainment, and corporate America, right? In the corporate world, when you come to the boardroom with a good idea, if you haven't really merchandised that idea all the way up, you don't know whose idea is going to be by the time it gets to the signing point, right? And you don't know how many iterations that original idea that you had is going to go through when it comes out on the other side. Sometimes not even looking like what you originally proposed and ended up being some kind of a dud.
Right.
So
and not only that, like at this point, people were like looking for ways to kind of like shut me down. You know how it is when you have like a bright, creative person. Some reason you think that companies want that, but actually they don't. Like they just want people that they can control. So then it became a point of like people wanting to like put me in my place. And so showing that they had power could just be like in shutting down my idea, whether it was good or bad, which is really bad. But anyway, they just wanted to like exert that, you know, exercise that power over me and like shut me down. So I think now that I'm thinking about it, part of it probably was like, I'm just not even going to bring this up to them because they just might shut it down just because, even though it's a really good idea.
Right. And, you know, look, at the end of the day, what we did learn how to do is circumvent any kind of issues that are going to keep us from reaching our goals.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, that's what we have to learn how to do. What you're not about to do is stop something that I know is possible. And I think what I'm realizing more and more as we go along is that most of the objection to really any great idea comes from people who really can't see what's possible.
Yeah.
It's a real gift and talent to be able to have an idea in your head and bring it into the earth realm. And oftentimes people are just used to being the participators, like once the thing is actually here and realized, as opposed to like, you know, how you would say being the visionaire and really having the vision, but then also having the business acumen to pull it all together. And so I think that's what you were combating too. Those people who were vision killers. And you know, that's what, you know, 2024 and beyond, I hope the lesson is we don't succumb to vision killers.
No, not at all. Not at all. So now that I had this partner, celebrity attachment, the next thing for me was to look at how I could integrate some of the brand initiatives that we had going on, you know, and just because we're going to have like a few hundred of the coolest of the cool New Yorkers, you know, media, all that. I was like, how can I integrate some elements of what is happening at Nike right now? So one of the things was the Nike Freestyle, you know, that commercial that Jimmy so brilliantly, you know, conceptualized. And so we were like looking at ways how we could integrate that and bring that to life. And some of those, you know, basketballers who were in that commercial, the Nike Freestyle commercial, came to the event and they were like, you know, demoing some of their like skills at the event. So that was one thing, because, you know, it was a big thing at the brand to look at all the ways that we could kind of like give that commercial, that campaign, some extra legs. So that was a part of what was featured at the event. I think that that video played on the screens at Nike Town. And then this is like how far back we go, Nikita. You remember when Nike had the MP3 players?
Yeah, I do.
Oh my God. Okay, so I realize I've been on technology and like I am always yes. So listen, this is what we did. We I was like, oh, they wanted us to kind of like, put that out there. I was like, you know what we're gonna do? We're gonna we recorded Alicia Keys, inviting people to this event, and then we put her invitation on like 20 of them. And the Trace magazine, he had like his VIP who were gonna get these invitations on the Nike MP3 player, including Iman and David Bowie were on the list.
Shut up. not Iman, my favorite.
Yes, Iman and David Bowie. I mean, they were all like friends of Claude. So yeah, and I just remember I like was like opening up this, packages of these MP3 players, copying Alicia Keys' personal invitation, putting it on the MP3 player, putting them back in the box.
I mean, everything.
Yes. Yes. So those are like just some of the ways, I was like integrating brand into like this event. And, like I said, I knew it was going to be a great platform. So just, looked at ways to highlight some of those initiatives. So, okay, we get to this event. And I'm pulling this off like I'm in like some secret. Okay, all right, so here we are, Nikita. I'm doing this. I know it's not undercover, but it's kind of like a little bit undercover. But I'm doing it, through Nike Town. They're excited. They're happy. We have the space. I think they were contributing a little money. Maybe we could do catering or something. So I'm communicating everything to Trace. They're really excited because they're going to be partnering with Nike. And they've got Alicia Keys, all this stuff. So here we are, the day of the event. Nike Town is on 57th Street in Manhattan. Maybe, what is this, Fifth Avenue? Yeah, around Fifth Avenue. This is the super ritzy, Louis Vuitton stores on the corner. Yes, all that. So Trace always has really amazing parties, okay? Like, I love Trace parties. It's always like cool people, models, it's beauty, it's fashion. Right. So, I knew it was going to be a good party, but I wasn't prepared for what actually happened.
And what transpired next.
Yes, what transpired next. I wasn't prepared. But I knew that it was something because let's say the party started at 7. Mm-hmm. And at like 6:30 or 6:15, people started lining up.
Wow. In New York.
In New York. I was like, what is going on? Like, we were not even ready and people were lining up.
So now wait, let me ask you this. Did you have like a radio partner or anything like that? Like, was it like people from the public who heard about it, or were these all invited guests?
All invited guests. So like Trace had a crazy list and then I had a crazy list. And then this was like New York. So people just start spreading the word to the point that the people in the New York office heard about this party that somehow I was trying to secretly have because they're...
Which I don't even know what possessed you to think they wouldn't hear about it, but go ahead.
Well, I mean, like I said, I just wasn't taking the chance. They would have tried to shut me down and I wasn't like putting like everything that I had, kind of had on the line with Trace and like, I just was like, I didn't want to take the chance. So I just wasn't really saying anything. And so they were getting calls, like people were like, can I get tickets to this Nike party? And they were like, what Nike party? And they were working Nike, they had no idea.
Right, so the Nike people had no idea about the Nike party happening at Nike Town.
Right, but a Nike Town knew about it. So that's all that really mattered. It was at Nike Town. Okay, so fine.
Exactly.
So now people are lining up, and you know, inside we've got all this amazing stuff going on. It's like wearable technology exhibitions, and you know, it's just like all these things, you know. And so people are piling in, and you know, Nike Town is like 5 floors, and like people are coming. They are coming. I feel like in the first, I don't know, hour, we were full. The capacity maybe was like 500 or 600 people. And like we reach capacity really, really fast.
So that means people must have been backing up into the street and sidewalks and everywhere. Had to be.
So inside the party, it was going amazing. Like we had like a grand piano, Alicia Keys was performed. And like I said, this was like the week her album dropped. So I feel like she had one or two singles and like everybody knew. I found some video of this and some pictures. So I'm gonna like post them on our social media. And I just remember it was so many people that I was like near her. I found some pictures and I see myself like, why do I always think I'm the security?
The littlest thing in the room, of course you
I'm
would think that.
like next to the girl sitting on her piano, and like I'm like acting like I'm the security, right? Because outside we had 500 or 600 people inside, and there probably was like 500 or 600 people outside. Like it turned into this massive, massive thing that they actually had the police came and blocked off 57th Street between like 5th and Madison. There
Wait.
were police on both ends, and there was like 600 people outside of this party trying to get in.
You shut down 57th Street is what I'm hearing.
Basically shut down 57th Street. Basically
I
shut
know
down 57th Street.
that.
And
With your
turned,
really your stealth event, your very stealthy event.
yeah, and turned Nike Town into like a performance hall. It was like a
I love
rocking
it.
party.
I wonder who the DJ was. Do you remember?
I don't know, but Trace always, they like, you know, had somebody in their little crew who was like the DJ.
Just imagining it was probably over the top. And
And
who
I'm,
knew? Did you have any idea that night, throwing that party, shutting down 57th Street, that one day Alicia Keys would sell over 90 million records worldwide? 90 million. Do you know how many records that is?
Well, we got a sense of it. That night, you knew she was a superstar. Like, I hadn't seen her perform before, but the energy that she was giving, that she was receiving, you're like, this is something big. Like, you know when it's something big. And so I'm not surprised, like, what she has become. I mean, what she's, you know, it's gone beyond anything. But definitely that night, we knew we were witnessing something really, really big and really, really special, you know.
Wow. I
So
still
that,
think
yeah, so
just
that was really amazing. But listen, it was a little bit scandalous. As I mentioned, I was really close with her PR person, but this is what happened was something that has really been happening a lot lately with like Black artists. We saw recently, oh, it was a thing with Lenny Kravitz. You saw that when he was like, yes, the Black, you know, media or the Black events, they don't call me. Did you see that recently?
did I? Did I? Because Levia J posted about it, and I just had to get in the comments because you know we've been all through it, right? And I'm like, you know, before everybody starts crying fake tears for Lenny, who I love, by the way. I mean, let's just take a moment to say how much Lenny Kravitz is that guy. I mean, total swoon. But ultimately, when you surround yourself with representation that's not like you, they're not going to value your culture or your people. Do you know, Mahamada, how many times sitting at an agent's desk at the William Morris Agency and at ICM that request would come through for Black artists for things that I know they would want to do that would never even get presented to them because their representation didn't value it. And either they didn't value it because they didn't know the publication, or because the money wasn't enough, or because they had their own motives. And so when you hire representation, just know that they're representing you. And listen, say what you want to say about Black media, Black promoters, but at the end of the day, nobody's going to chase you down and continue to invite you to things when you consistently thumb your nose at them and oftentimes don't even give them the courtesy, Mohammeda, of a decline or of a pass.
Yeah.
Or
dismissed.
Just completely dismissed, overlooked, marginalized. And so, yeah, at a certain point, your phone will stop ringing from Black media.
Yeah.
Because what, I mean, there's a lot of talent out here that we would choose to focus on, people who value the work and who realize that the Black audience is looking to us for that display and representation of Black excellence in media and in film and TV, right? That's what we're turning to Black media for. Mm-hmm. And you're listening and you're not being invited because your people have shut it down time over time.
Yeah.
That's well, the first opinion.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what happened. And so when Alicia Keys found out, she had to fire her publicist when she found out that, like, you know, Black media, I don't know if it was Essence, I'm not sure what, like, somehow it got back to her that, like, they weren't being allowed to get an interview with her because of her, you know, PR people, and she had to, like, shut it down, which is what people have to do.
Should do.
So that actually happened. I was, like, you know, happy to hear that. Not, I mean, I was a friend of the PR guy, but, like, happy to hear, but I didn't know that he was doing that, A, and B, good to see that she took a stand, because sometimes, like, the artists, the talent, ignore it. They just, you know, they don't realize that they have a certain kind of power that they do to have, you know, to have who is really a true representation of them on their team. They just think this is the industry and I have to take it.
I mean, if we just want to go in the deep end of the pool, Mohammeda, a lot of them value that crossover effect.
Mm-hmm.
They would rather be on the cover of a non-Black publication than a Black one because they feel that that's going to validate them in a way,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to realizing that you can do both and. However, you should always be preferring your own.
Yeah.
And so sometimes people just don't, Black artists sometimes, not all the time, don't value the Black audience. They value the other audience, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you see that play out time and again. And now that Black is the hot thing, and now that we've sort of kicked the doors open wider and really being able to stake a claim in this thing for real. Yeah, of course, now you want to be recognized and invited to the Black stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And then just thinking about, like, supporting Black media, that's why it was so important for me to support Trace and, you know, give them that platform. And I didn't want that to get taken away. And I knew, I, like, really deep in my heart that it would have. And I just wanted to just protect that and give them that. I mean, they deserve that. Look at that. I mean, like, over 1,000 people turned out. And that was a good look for Nike. You know what I mean? Like, no other brand ever had nothing that popping.
Love it. One of the most brilliant things that has happened. And I think, just really kind of setting the stage for what integrating marketing programs look like now.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about the technology piece, you think about the multiple partners and just bringing together all the pieces for a fantastic event, giving your audience, your consumer, a really unique interactive experience. I mean, that wasn't really happening back then.
No, it wasn't. It really wasn't.
You would go to a record release party, Mohammed, and you know, because we went to so many.
Mm-hmm.
It's a space with the stage, they play on the music all night.
Mm-hmm.
The audience, the artist may take the stage and do a couple songs, food, drinks. Sometimes mainly just drinks, not oftentimes not even a lot of food.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So really elevated.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was a really wonderful experience. Definitely one of the top events I've done. I did while at Nike. And I would say in my top 10 all time. You know, I got my top 10 events that I worked on and been a part of. I'm going to say definitely that was one of them. Yeah, but so Swiss Beatz, I worked with a few times at Nike. He was a big time producer. We know all the like hits that he had, you know, as a producer. Quite close with them, but never, like, you know how you're always like waiting for the opportunity. You know how it is, like, we can't make the opportunity. The opportunities have to come either through the ad agency or somebody, you know, or is looking for music or artist or DJ or something like that. But in the meantime, you know, you just keep cultivating those relationships. I remember Swiss Beatz let me kind of like be the AD on one of his music videos because I was interested in, you know, being a director at one time.
Yes, yes.
Well, I guess I did the little direction, but I did AD. I don't know if it's his video or one of his artists. I'm not 100% sure. I can't remember the exact video. I'm going to have to brainstorm and see if I can think that up. But I'm close with him. And, you know, Ashana, who we are going to have on an episode, she was like leading his marketing from his like independent label at the time. Like, really cool. I feel like I went to a music conference and Swiss Beatz, maybe he was hosting an event there. I think it was in Miami or Puerto Rico or somewhere. So he was with his first wife, Mashonda, who is, you know, big in the art world right now too. And yeah, hung out with them. I used to hang out with them a little bit. And then finally, an opportunity came. Swiss Beatz to work with Nike, the digital agency that Nike worked with. At the time, it's called RGA. They've actually grown into, you know, a pretty big agency. But they were working with Nike Basketball. I feel like some kind of like website or something. And they wanted music for like, you know, the background music or something like that. It might have been this. I'm not exactly 100% sure. Something RGA, definitely. Something Nike and possibly basketball. They wanted music, and I had the opportunity to get Swiss Beatz involved. So I was really excited about that. Yeah, so he did the music, and I think from there he actually, you know, did a few things with RGA from that relationship.
Oh, I love that. So yeah, I think I stumbled across some press about that. So I'll send it to you. You can also put a link in our bio.
Oh, great. Yes. Oh,
2008.
Okay. All right. Great. Yeah. I think that I probably did something with him before, but that just, you know, probably that relationship just extended on probably, once they got the relationship with him, I'm sure they worked with him, you know, a few more times and, you know, continued that. Yeah. And shout out to Swiss. That's the first G-Wagon I ever rode in was Swiss Beatz G-Wagon.
Cut it out. Cut it out. I love it. You know what they say? We always remember our first.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Yeah. So, oh yeah, just his whole family. I didn't do a lot of work with like DNY, but I was really close with his uncle Poe. A really, really good friend. Just like their whole family, the Dean family, is like really tight, really close knit. I mean, you see what the brothers and sisters, you know, did with their whole record label and, you know, so, and he's just like continued their, like the Dean family legacy. So,
I love that. And, you know, because a lot of what we do centers on sneakers, I did see that Swiss Beatz had a Reebok sneaker, the DMX, in what, 2018, 2019?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So these worlds are always colliding, you know, as we talked about so many times here on the podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's done a lot of brand collabs too. I feel like he did something with some like luxury cars. Yeah, he's done a lot of brand collabs and just had like a really clean image. Like, you rarely hear, like, I don't think I've ever heard anything negative.
Aside from the whole, you know, marriage thing, but yeah.
Well, I mean, right, true. But you know, music, rock stars, you're gonna usually hear some kind of like drug, alcohol, you know, kind of craziness. But yeah, but I mean, they they have really been promoting the whole blended family concept. I think they've even written a book, right? Alicia and Machonda, and I don't know if the two women or if Swiss was involved, I'm not really sure, but they wrote a whole book about like how they successfully, have, had a blended family with, stepchildren and ex-wives and, just having peace, which is, pretty rare, as we all know.
Yeah, no, I think that is so admirable. And it's what our community needs is to just find a way forward, no matter what's happening or what we're enduring or how we came to be in a certain situation, particularly when there are children involved, to be able to really take the high road and determine what your new family structure looks like is super powerful. And I think it does set a super positive example. So you're 100% right. And to your earlier point, I love seeing music artists, particularly hip hop artists and Black actors and actresses, leveraging their own personal brand equity and aligning with more well-known brands, right? Because that's just going to help increase their wealth. And their legacy. And you did mention Swiss Beatz, and I think he's done deals with Bally and Christian Louboutin and Audemars and Aston Martin, Lotus. I mean, just so many super cool collabs. And I love this concept, this idea, this really reality now that anything is possible, no matter if you're working at your desk right now, but you want to be a writer, right? If you are a college student, but you want to get an intern at the internship at the White House, that really anything is possible and so achievable. And so I hope people hear about him and Alicia and what they're doing and get inspired to not have to fit into a box, right? But that you can be an R&B artist with your cornrows sitting behind your baby grand piano
Right.
and sell 90 million records at some point. And then marry, what seems to be your life partner and put your artwork and your art collection on display at the Brooklyn Museum in the month of February.
Yep.
How amazing.
Some great moments in my Nike career, and just to see, where they have gone in their career. Most of the artists that we worked with 20 years ago, Nikita, are still relevant to this day. Like, we knew who to work with, to align, our the brand at that time with. And that is just like really a testament of like our instincts too.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think that's why, I didn't really have any trouble admitting that I had gotten this one wrong because there were so many. I'd say we had like a 95%
Yep.
success rate in terms
Yep.
of knowing who to say yes to and who, was really gonna take off and do well and being able to build those relationships early on. But no, I just love having this conversation with you and hearing about your strategic approach.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Soul Chronicles, the podcast navigating life and times in the sneaker, sports, and entertainment and corporate America. I'm your co-host, Mohammeda El-Muhajir, along with.
Nikita Noah Hall.
Yes, great. So we're back. It's 2024. You're going to hear a lot more from us. We've got some amazing guests lined up, some amazing artists and topics to discuss. So stay tuned. Make sure you follow us on all social media platforms at The Soul Chronicles. If you want to support our independent podcast, go ahead and, send us a little support. You can do that right from Spotify or any other platform that you're listening to. Send us a message, send us a like, send us a subscribe. That's a free way to support. Okay, thanks for joining us and see you next time.
Thanks for listening to The Soul Chronicles, the podcast navigating life and times in the sneaker industry, Hollywood, and corporate America. Be sure to join us for another exciting episode.